listening to Fox Sports Radio.
You know, the number 59 has historical significance in sports. It represents the number of consecutive scoreless innings by Dodgers pitcher Orel Hershiser back in 1988. It's also the number that Pittsburgh Steeler Hall of Famer Jack Ham wore. And it's also the most number of days in a row that America has gone without any of the four major professional sports teams playing a game. Now, that happened in 1981 during the Major League Baseball player strike, 59 days in a row. Tomorrow marks 59 days in a row that we've been without Major League sports being played in the USA. Interestingly enough, Major League Baseball might actually be the first to return, and in a minute we'll welcome in our guest, a 10-year former Major League veteran, who is also a 25-year broadcast professional veteran, in just a second. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. So go to geico.com for a free rate quote. Sports are entertainment, but they're more than that. They're a shared experience, and as such, people want to talk about them. So pull up a chair, join the party. For the next hour, we have one goal: to simply enjoy ourselves. This is Straight Out of Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. And as they say in Cesar Tovar, Minnesota, it's going to be lit. All right, we waste no time. Let's welcome in a gentleman. He's a 10-year major leaguer, a 25-year broadcast professional. He's always had his finger on the pulse of Major League Baseball. Say hello to Larry Sorensen. Larry, how are you, buddy?
Bernie, I'm doing great, man. This is just like old times, sitting up at 2 in the morning talking baseball with you.
I love it. Let's dive right into it because we've got so much to get to. And before we dive into the mechanics, Larry, of what the 2020 Major League Baseball season could look like, I want you to answer a question. I want to ask you a question that I believe you're uniquely qualified to answer. See, because in 1981, you remember the St. Louis Cardinals, and you experienced the 59-day layoff during the 1981 strike. So take us inside of the mindset of a Major League athlete who's dormant when his body clock says he should be at work.
Well, it was so hard to do it in the middle of the season because the St. Louis Cardinals were having a terrific year, and I think we ended up with the best overall record in the National League, or the second best record in the National League, but didn't make it to the playoffs because they took champions from the first and second half teams when they split it up. So it was my first year with the Cardinals. Whitey Herzog had made a big trade in the wintertime. He traded Ted Simmons, Raleigh Fingers, and Pete Vukovich to St. Louis for myself, Sixto Lescano, David LaPointe, and David Green. So it was a big deal, and we were off to a great start. And then all of a sudden, the union said, and baseball said, we're going to shut it down. So it was really difficult. The adrenaline that goes along with the season was in mid-season form, and all of a sudden there was nothing to do the next day. You just didn't report to the ballpark. So we didn't really know what to do. Everybody was just floundering around, looking to figure it out and see what we were going to do, how we were going to handle it. And that seems like it's kind of the way that it is right now.
Exactly. I wanted to draw that parallel because we had spring training this year for the most part. Looked like we were getting ready to start a season and then thud, like you just said. And by the way, I always believe they owed you a World Series share from 82 because you're with Milwaukee in 80, right? And St. Louis. In St. Louis, well, you get the picture. So,
yeah, 82 was a very good year for the Cardinals and Brewers. Not so much for the Indians where I was.
But you contributed. So anyway, let's dive into this. So Major League Baseball, they're expected to send their proposal, it looks like Tuesday, as to when the 2020 season could start, and the Players Association has to evaluate it. So what's your analysis of the plan, and do you think it'll get ratified?
Well, I think the first thing that we're going to have to do is see exactly what the plan entails, because there's so many rumors going around right now, it's hard to sort it all out. I'm not exactly sure what the logic and rationale is going to be behind the regional schedule that they're talking about, 10 teams and 3 divisions, and trying to line it up east, central, west. If they're going to do that, do you carry it over into the following seasons? Certainly travel wouldn't be a factor because you've got to travel anyway. You're not going to bus guys from Detroit to Miami or wherever the case may be, or Detroit to Texas. So the airplane travel is going to be a factor. Hotel stays are going to be a factor. Players quarantining are going to be a factor. I think really it's all up to the virus right now. Much like the rest of us are going through in life, the virus is going to decide what we do.
One of the factors, by the way, we're with Larry Sorensen, 25-year broadcaster, 10-year Major League player. Larry, 40% of the revenue comes from fans and stands, and it looks like at most they would play 80 games, which means the revenue pot is a lot less. From the players you've talked to, I know you've got your finger on the pulse. How are they going to feel playing under such reduced salaries?
Well, I think that the players would be willing to do it because any salary is better than no salary at this point in time. Plus, there is the love of the game that you want to go out there and play. Certainly would be a very unusual situation. We remember the game in Baltimore when there were no fans in the stands, and it was just such an oddity and such a thing to do. But even to televise it, when you start talking about the production people that would be involved to get them to televise the games, you know, that's an entirely new proposition there to try to move people around to get them the television exposure that you would like to have. A lot of complications involved with that. It would certainly be odd. I think that the players would be amenable to finding a way to do it. These days, to be honest, Bernie, I talk to a lot more of the organizational people, and we're going to talk about the PitchLogic baseball a little bit later.
But right.
I'm talking right. almost daily with front office staff and the management of the baseball teams, and they're all just up in a state of flux. I mean, spring training happened, and I talked to guys who said literally on Thursday night, they said, you've got 15 minutes on Friday morning to go in and get your stuff out of the locker room, and then you're going home. And that's the way that it happened. And I just talked to some guys on Friday, and they said, we got no idea. They just said, stick by the phone. That's all we can tell you right now.
Talking with Larry Sorensen, 25-year broadcaster, 10-year major league pitcher. Now, I'm going to ask this question tongue-in-cheek because in 1982, and again, this is a question you're uniquely qualified to answer. It's one thing to play the game in Baltimore. Remember that. It's another thing, you know, Arizona Fall League, there's nobody there. But in 1982, you were with the Cleveland Indians. So tell us what it's like to play in front of no fans every night.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories. That stadium held about 81,000 people.
Right, it was built for the Olympics, right?
Yeah, in Cleveland Municipal Stadium. So we're playing. I rode in on a plane with Rick Sutcliffe, who had been traded over there in the wintertime, and we went to do the caravan, and we talked about it. And I said, it's going to be a little bit different in Cleveland. You know, it's not going to be like the Dodgers were when you were with Los Angeles. He said, sure, right. You know, and we go through spring training, and everything's good. We get to Cleveland for opening day, and we're playing the Milwaukee Brewers, one of my old teams. First day, there's about 69,000 people, and it was crazy. You know, it was wild. It was opening day, and Sutcliffe comes over and he says, "What's wrong with this? This is great." And I said, "Just wait." The next day, there's about 4,900 people in the stands, and I'll never forget my roommate, my old roommate with Milwaukee, Mike Caldwell, yells over from the other dugout. He says, "Hey, roommate, you pass gas over there? Thought I heard you." You know, you could hear people in the stands talking to each other. It was wild. We weren't very good. But, you know, that's what happens. That's just what happens. That's baseball.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic, of course. But and I didn't mean to step on you there, but that stadium was actually built because Cleveland made a bid for the 1932 Olympics, which Los Angeles ultimately got. So if anybody ever went to that cavernous place, which I think they unfairly called it the mistake on the lake, man, it held a lot of people. So back to the deal. You've got the players' union and you've got the owners, and they have to meet in the middle, and I think they've already been contentious. It looked like the CBA next year was going to be, you know, hard-fought. So let's start on the players' union. So, Larry, to the best of your knowledge, what would be a showstopper that would be part of this proposed agreement that would prevent baseball from taking place?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the really difficult things I think is going to be how they're going to house people. Because if you want to take some players and say you've got to be quarantined for 3 months, you know, away from your family for the 3 months, that would be a really difficult thing to do. And I don't know how they're going to handle the housing situation. There's talk about putting teams in apartment complexes together or maybe taking over a hotel, things of that nature. So that's one of the complications. I think part of it, too, that I hope that they stay away from is they can't get like Congress, you know, because we see them agree on the basic principles of some kind of a deal. And then all of a sudden you get that agreement on the main portion. And at the last second, somebody tries to tag something else that's completely non-related, you know, and you hope that baseball wouldn't come down to that phase. As
right.
you mentioned, the CBA expires next year, and to start negotiating while you're trying to get the product back on the field this year, I think would be a mistake. So who knows where they're going to be coming from. everybody misses it. We know what a great unifier the national pastime can be and has been in the past. I just happened to see the clip of President Bush throwing out that first pitch after 9/11 recently. And, man, just goosebumps all over the place.
All right, let's take a look at the ownership side. What would be a showstopper in terms of what they're not willing to part with on a go-forward basis to get the season going?
Man, that's a great question, because there are some very contentious issues.
Yes.
I think that one of the things that baseball is trying to do so much is to change the pace of the game and I don't quite understand it, but to try to change the pace of the game and shorten the time a little bit. So, you know, I've heard some folks suggest that if you're only going to play 80 to 100 games, this is the time to try out all the different things. This is the time to try out a new time clock in the big leagues instead of the minor leagues. This is the time to try out maybe an extra inning with a runner on second base. This might be the time to try out some other new gadget things they want to introduce. We're already going to be seeing, we're supposed to have been seeing the three-hitter rule. To try to pick up the pace. So I hope that the Major League Baseball doesn't try to say, well, we'll try to experiment with seven different things instead of just the two things that we really had focused on for the upcoming season.
By the way, I did hear that you can confirm this or not, that they would be going with 45-man rosters.
I can't confirm that. It's one of the great questions. I'd also heard that they were going to keep an array of players in kind of an extended spring training. So essentially keep one minor league team playing at the minor league ballparks someplace in order to have a reserve system. So, again, that's the kind of stuff that will be negotiated between MLB and the Players Association, which is always an interesting process, too. I remember in 81, back to that a little bit, I was living in St. Louis, and obviously there were a great deal of players that were there, and it was always a central point for players that lived there after the season was over, because St. Louis was a great place to live. They took care of the players and everything else. And we started out working out very regularly and very fervently because we thought it was going to be a quick strike. And we were playing simulated games on a college field. Ted Simmons was organizing guys, and we had a phone call out, and Bobby Forsh and Keith Hernandez and Suter and everybody stayed around, and we were working out. And after about 2 weeks, man, it was all, okay, let's play catch for 15 minutes and then sit in the back of the truck and drink beer and figure out what the union's talking about with the owners. And you get away from it pretty quickly. Now,
sure,
training methods
sure.
are different these days. Most players are still working out as they have in the off season and keeping themselves ready, but it's going to be an interesting process.
And then all of a sudden, the snow melted August 11th, and the All-Star Game was in Cleveland. We were back in business. So let's hope, Larry, let's really all hope that baseball is back on July 4th. It would be a tough pill to swallow to not be able to have a pup on July 4th and watch a ball game. He's Larry Sorensen. Now, coming up, you know, COVID-19 has affected players on every level, but it hasn't prevented you from training like a pro. Talk about analytics. Larry's going to explain coming up. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted, so don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
The great Bernie Fratto, folks.
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios. We're with Larry Sorensen, 10-year major leaguer, 25-year broadcaster. You know, Larry, everything in baseball evolves. There was a time when lifting weights was taboo, and that's why pitch logic is so intriguing. This is a revolutionary product that can truly make a player get to his ceiling. Tell the folks, Larry, about pitch logic.
Yeah, pitch logic is, analytics has become the rage of the game, and teams are using it in so many different ways. But this pitch logic is primarily a baseball that has sensors inside, and it uses Major League quality leather, uses the exact same thread that's made on a Major League Baseball. And it's got sensors inside that give you 12 different metrics that are the 12 basic metrics that every ball club uses and needs. So all the spin rates that we hear so much about, you've got total spin, but what the Pitch Logic Baseball does is breaks it down to rifle spin, back spin, which is the hot number these days, and side spin, And it tells you on each pitch that you throw exactly what the numbers are, and you get an instant feedback right to your cell phone or to your iPad that tells you what that previous pitch did on its way to home plate. So it gives you velocity. It gives you the lift force. It gives you the break direction. It gives you where your arm slot is. There's a clock face on the app. And you can download the app for free. Just go to pitchlogic.com, and you can download the app to your phone and take a look at it. But 12 different metrics that can help you with every single pitch that you throw by telling you what that baseball did on its way to home plate. And it's not just for the pro guys. I've got 10-year-olds that come into our lab and use it, and they get it. You know, people learn differently these days, and the young people get it. So it's been a lot of fun to work with. I've been working with this company for 2 years now, and it's been a fascinating process along the way.
The ability to have that kind of access to data where you can track every pitch and you can metrically see that you're getting better or you're progressing, obviously even at the higher levels when things are so more refined, I'm hearing now that Major League Baseball teams are very interested in this product.
Well, we started selling it last year about the middle of the summer, and I started going to the different pro teams. And if we hadn't had this little pause in the action this spring, we'd have had all 30 teams that were using it. We're very strict about the information, who gets it at that pro level. But it's really going to be a tool that will go across all levels of play, from the major leaguers down to the little leaguers. We're just finishing up a program. We'll have baseballs in the hands of pitchers on every major league staff. The minor leagues use them to develop quite a bit, because the machines that are our chief competitors cost anywhere from $3,500 to about $35,000. And we've heard of the TrackMan inside the stadium, and Rapsodo, and the Stalker, and they're all fine, fine instruments, and they do good work. We just think that having the information come out of the inside of the baseball gives you the most accurate information that there is on the market.
Talking with Larry Sorensen and Pitch Logic. Larry, obviously players have a tendency to look for different results, but they don't realize they're doing the same thing over and over. Can you dive down a little deeper in terms of how the ball can share with a pitcher if he's improving the tightness of his breaking balls or his velocity or these things of this nature?
Well, spin efficiency is one of the key things that that the pitchers look for when they're throwing the baseball, and they want to make sure that the ball is spinning in the most efficient manner that it possibly can. So one of the numbers that takes energy away is called rifle spin, or they call it bullet spin or gyro spin. And it means that the ball comes out and is spinning like a bullet does coming out of the rifle, and that's energy that's not helping the ball break in any direction. And so what you're able to measure is exactly what that spin efficiency is. You just tap on one button and it comes up as a percentage. And you can see that if you change your hand grip, if you change the angle of your hand, if you change your arm slot, you can change the spin efficiency of what you're doing with the baseball. If you want to try throwing a curveball a couple of different ways, you can mark with the PitchLogic system, you can mark the different grips that you use and do a side-by-side comparison of which is the most effective pitch that you're throwing. There's a clock face that shows you with a line where your arm angle is, where your arm slot is, and there's also another line that shows you the spin direction that the ball is breaking. And you can tell, and by looking at the variances, you can determine how you yourself are most effectively. You don't necessarily have to be Justin Verlander. You have to be the best you.
I'm guessing also, because this enables you to more consistently develop your mechanics, balance point, release point, and such, you talk about arm slot, I'm guessing it can help prevent injury. Is that a fair guess?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the ways, and it's really interesting, you know, having the 30,000 foot view of what all the organizations are doing, it's been really interesting for us to be able to sit back and see which direction they're going. So a lot of the ways that we've gotten in, with some of the teams is through their rehab departments, because you can measure the amount of energy that guys are putting into their throws. You know, are they operating, if a guy normally throws 90, and we only want him throwing two-thirds of that, we only want him putting out two-thirds effort, they can monitor with the PitchLogic baseball exactly how much these guys are how much they're throwing. They can see if they're getting back to the normal baselines that they've established when they were healthy when they come back. So for scouting, imagine, and we've got numbers that come in from all over the world where organizations send the ball home in the wintertime with their players. And so we get the throws that come in from all over the world as guys use it in the off season. Scouting, rehab, player development, the minor league level, monitoring your flat ground throws, monitoring your long toss throws. It can be used in a number of different ways, and we're even starting to get into infield catchers and outfielders throwing with it to measure so that they can see what the ball is doing when they release it.
Do you have some baseline numbers established in terms of what might make an individual a prospect? For instance, anybody who's ever signed, the organization's going to time you in the 60. They're going to watch you throw from 300 feet. You've got a lot of great metrics here having to do with speed, backspin, side spin, et cetera. Are these things scouts are now paying attention to that might cause a scout to look at a player differently when he sees these metrics?
Well, they're the kind of things that aren't as readily available to catch because you don't have the access to the numbers. So if you can get to a workout and have a prospect throw with these, and we do work with the showcases and with the camps and a different tournament situation, guys throwing on the side, and so those numbers be available. And then, you know, the flat ground app that's online where players that are trying to go to college are able to post their numbers online so that people can see it. Those are all areas that that it's useful in. But there's a lot of different ways that it can be used. People are still finding out exactly how to use it because it's only been used to this point primarily in the professional organizations and the colleges. Colleges are just as current with things as the pro guys are in a lot of cases. So it's filtered down to that level and then into some of the high schools as well.
Wrapping it up with Larry Sorensen, 10-year Major League pitcher, knows a thing or two about pitching, retired 9 straight guys in the 78 All-Star Game, 25-year broadcaster. Larry, go ahead and give the website how folks can get more information and look into purchasing the baseball.
Yeah, PitchLogic sells for $250, and we've got a refurbishing program. If the leather, which is Major League quality leather, if that gets scuffed up after a few months and you need to refurbish it, send it in to us, and for $50, we will put a new cover on it and send you back a brand-new baseball. So go to pitchlogic.com. Check out the website. There's a description of all the different metrics that are involved. Like I said, 12 different metrics. We're going to have a new app that's coming out in a couple of months that does some things that the pro guys have requested that will really have some mind-blowing capabilities as far as some of the things that the body does when it throws the pitch, and it gets a lot deeper into it. But for the 12 basics that everybody uses on a routine basis, it can be on your phone. There's no subscription fee. You can sign up as many players on your team as you want. They can each have their own account so that they can log in. You can get a printed report out after your session is over so you can look at all the different pitches you threw. It's a great tool to use on the mound. You can swipe back and forth between pitches and take a look at what you just did. It's really a lot of fun to play with, and it gets very competitive. Guys use it. Somebody throws with it, the next guy comes over, and he wants to beat the other guy's numbers. That's big out Las Vegas, isn't it? Beating somebody else's numbers.
You're spot on. Analytics, metrics, you're speaking our language. He's Larry Sorensen. That's Pitch Logic. Go to the website. Sounds like a bargain to me. I know guys that spend $400 or $500 on an aluminum bat. So for something to give you this kind of technology, sounds like a terrific thing. Larry, best to you. Thanks for joining us tonight. He's Larry Sorensen, 10-year major leaguer, 25-year broadcaster. Thanks for staying up late, Larry.
Always a pleasure, old friend.
All right, right back at you. He is Larry Sorensen. Go to pitchlogic.com. No matter what level you're playing, you're always going to want to get better. Trust me, because your competitors are. Coming up, well, we're going to talk about The Last Dance, preview it. We've even got some betting thoughts on that and some props that have been decided, some yet to be decided. We're going to preview, by the way, episode 7 tomorrow. It's a doozy. I'll tell you what you're going to see. And also later in the show, did the schedule makers just hate the New England Patriots? I will explain why. But first, let's go to the man. He's so tough, he came in contact with the coronavirus, and now the virus is in quarantine. It's Brian Finley with the latest.
Yeah, I body slammed that virus, that's for sure. Thank you so much, Bernie. Live professional sports making its long-awaited return in the United States. UFC 249 showcased a stacked card on Saturday from Jacksonville. In the main event, Justin Gaethje capturing the interim lightweight title after emasculating Tony Ferguson by TKO in the fifth round. Gaethje boasting after the match, quote, "I knew I was a killer stepping in. I'm good, bro." end quote. He improves to 22-2. Earlier on the schedule, Henry Cejudo wins TKO style over Dominick Cruz to regain the bantamweight belt. Cejudo announcing his retirement after the match, and when he was asked what's next for him in his life, he said, quote, "I want to give my life to procreation," end quote. Also on the card, Francis Ngannou disposing of his opponent in 20 seconds, his fourth straight first round TKO, or KO, I should say. And finally, Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports is reporting Major League Baseball will produce a proposal on Tuesday in regards to having a 2020 season. And then the owners on Monday will all hop on a conference call to sort out the details. Back to our guy, our fearless leader, Bernie Fratto.
That virus is no match for your socks and sandals, buddy.
No Book way. It.
Hey, get your free credit scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer, to include your FICO credit score, and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him. The man is the hardest working man in rock and roll. That's Mackenzie Rivers. It's time for Mackin' on the NBA. Before we dive into all this great work you've done, I want to get two things off my chest.
Go ahead.
All we heard all last week after my commentary is, well, you know, Jordan's not the only one that didn't like Isaiah. Duh, I know all that. The point I was making was that Jordan would not have played if Isaiah was on the team. The rest of the guys, they would have gone along. Jordan wouldn't. And Stern knew it, and he was not about to mess with that. So tomorrow night, Mackenzie, episodes 7 and 8, it's going to get real. They're going to deal with the extremely unfortunate murder of James Jordan, the Jordan retirement press conference, which is very emotional. We get into Jordan's baseball career, and then, of course, the famous, infamous punch from Jordan when he hit Steve Kerr in the face. And by the way, my moles tell me that Kerr actually hit him first, Mackenzie.
Yeah, he gave him a shiver, right? A shiver for him. Like,
punched him in the chest, I think.
You're going to be a little too close right now. I'm Steve Mother Kerr, man. can't get into my space like that. Kerr said he's not proud of that event. I think that's the most proudest moment of his life. I mean, you stood with the man, the Babe Ruth of his era, you know, the Mr. Invincible, Michael Jordan, and you didn't take guff from nobody. I think he should be proud of that.
Well, and not only that, Jordan's the one that got kicked out of practice, not Kerr.
Right. Phil Jackson saw...
Kerr, former high school teammate of Arnie Spanier.
I heard they're really close friends.
Right. Arnie's gone on to great things. I don't know whatever happened to that Kerr guy, but that's a story for another...
I heard Spanier's the better shooter, too. I mean, that's just what I heard.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. You can't leave him open. He's big shot. You've heard of Big Shot Bob? Big Shot Arnie. All right, let's go over some of these props because you can bet on everything these days, right? You can't bet on these in Vegas. But let's go through. Okay, so one of the props that's already in, the first person to be shown in the series other than Michael Jordan, and the winner is?
Scottie Pippen, number 2.
Now, some of the names on this list are stupid. Why would Jerry Seinfeld be there? Now, Justin Timberlake actually made the cut. But he
talking about buying the Air Jordans.
He wasn't the first one. Locker. Now, here's another one. This was minus 300. Jordan's game-winning national champ shot.
Some of these are such easy winners in hindsight. Of course they're going to show that. I mean, there hasn't been too many final seconds shot winner. One of them was by Michael Jordan. They're going to show that. Will Gambling be mentioned? That was minus 200, so 67% chance. That was a lock. How can you tell the story of Michael Jordan without at least mentioning gambling, you know, with all the things that came out around the early 90s? Another one, Will Jordan cry? Now, this is something, it was even money, 50-50 either way.
Now, let's clarify this, because Jordan is sort of the protagonist. He sits in his chair, and he's sort of the narrator, as it were, for lack of a better term. It's my understanding and understanding this prop that Jordan had. I mean, they've already shown him crying in old film,
right? Right.
91, when he's hugging the Lawrence O'Brien trophy and all that. My understanding is for this prop to cash, Jordan has to cry.
On camera.
And my moles tell me that's going to happen tomorrow night.
Yes, that's what people are saying. They're saying he breaks down when he talks about, I mean, this stretch happens in a row. The gambling saga, his father's death, his retirement from the NBA. You know, that adds up. And when he's talking about his leadership and what it took for him to, you know, burden everything that he did as the number one guy on that team for so many years. Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a surprise at this point. He's cried, you know, in public events almost every time, every chance he gets. Hall of Fame, weeping it up. Kobe Bryant, you know, I feel for him. But it's nice. It's nice that Mr. Invincible also has a soft side.
Let's talk about some other luminaries. This one, will Kobe Bryant be seen? We knew that was coming. Minus 300, that would have cashed, right?
Interestingly, LeBron James, even money, three episodes left. I haven't seen them. So if you bet the no on that, you know, you can watch it from the edge of your seat the last couple episodes.
Pretty much even money, minus 120 both sides. Barack Obama. Now, if you think he is going to be featured in any episode for any reason, yes, plus 200, no, minus 300. As yet to have appeared. It's not a question I've asked. I don't know if he will or won't.
No, he has appeared. The prop was actually, will he tweet about the documentary? So he has appeared, so you've cashed on that if you bet will Barack Obama.
Did he tweet about it?
I just checked his Twitter account. He has not. I don't know what he's doing with his time. I don't know how many other premiere 6 million viewers documentaries he's seen on every week. Get on it, Barack. Come on. Pump this up a little bit. We don't have sports. We got to make this like a Super Bowl event every weekend.
Some of the other props... Now, where did this come from? The Bill Clinton impeachment. Now, that took place in 98, right? I remember that. But so what does that have to do with the Price of Rice
it's
here?
The same thing with Jerry Seinfeld. It's just, will the 90s be emphasized in that way to kind of, you know, go into the Space Jam era and the Green Days? And will we get to relive his 90s? Not so much for now. I don't know how Jordan felt about the impeachment. I'm pretty sure he was, you know, pro.
Now, the last one I want to talk about. Will it win an Emmy Award?
Lock it
no
up.
Minus 500. I tell you what, if this doesn't win an Emmy Award, I don't know what the hell is.
Like, I don't know what documentaries.
Everybody's talking about this.
What sport documentaries are out there that are competition? I don't know. But everybody's talking about this and rave reviews across the board. Have you heard anyone say, yeah, kind of boring, kind of slow? No, I mean, people have talked about how it's kind of disjointed going from early to late 90s back and forth. I'm not a movie critic. All I know is everyone that I know watches this on Sunday, Sunday.
Good for you. No one ever grew up wanting to be a critic. And the only, I would say the only negative commentary I've heard about this is that they think it's too slanted and that it's coming from the prism of Jordan and he's really sort of had poetic license to do whatever he wants. I don't care. To me, he's still the most consequential athlete in the history of the NBA.
That might be true. It might be from his angle. It might be slanted, but it's not.
I don't care.
It's not like they're hiding that fact. They open up the show. He's on the couch. They're, you know, doing the 360 view while he's smoking a cigarette, looking into the distance, thinking about his life. It's obviously what Michael Jordan remembers about this run.
He's been an open book, even in the political situation where he didn't endorse the senator of North Carolina. Listen, I'm giddy about this because I was there in the middle of it. I was in Detroit, the Bad Boys, the whole deal. I felt like I had a front row seat when this was actually happening, so this is a treat for me. But regardless, you cannot not watch this and not be tangibly, visibly, viscerally affected by watching Michael Jordan. Coming up, Mackenzie and I are going to talk about why the New England Patriots aren't going to win as many games as you think. Now, we're not going to bash them. But we're going to qualify what we just said and where you might want to bet on the over-under that's posted on the board here in Las Vegas. What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? It means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted, so don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
One of the best in the business, Bernie Fratto.
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. Hey, get your free credit scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer, to include your FICO credit score, and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. Before I go any further, I want to thank my broadcast team back in Los Angeles. That would be Eric Roberts, Chris Perfett, and Brian Finley. Turning all the dials, keeping us glued together. Guys, thanks so much for all that you do. Mackenzie, big day in Vegas Thursday. They announced the full schedules, and I want to dive into that. It's a perfect segue because I want to talk about the New England Patriots. And I heard Bucky Brooks today, he's a guy I respect a lot, say that he thinks that they're going to be just fine and they're going to win the division. Well, they're favored. They're tied with Buffalo for the 17th straight year, plus 120. Their total is 8.5. Here is why I think, and by the way, I think the Pats are going to be competitive. Belichick will play a ball control field position game. They're not going to make a lot of mistakes. They're not going to turn the ball over. They're not going to blow assignments. They're not going to beat themselves. They're going to hang around, and they'll be just good enough to maybe go 8-8. So I'm going under. Now, I'm going to tell you why. The Patriots, in addition to losing Tom Brady, will they pick up a first-place schedule again? In fact, they've got the toughest schedule in the National Football League based on the fact that their opponents had a 540 winning percentage last year cumulatively, and the Patriots get to face seven teams that had double-digit wins in 2019. By the way, they've got three straight road games in December over an 11-day period as the season is winding down. They get to face Lamar Jackson, Week 10. They get to face Jimmy G in San Francisco, Week 7. The Pats open up against Miami, and for whatever reason, Bill Belichick, in his career, 1-2 in openers versus the Miami Dolphins. Check this out, McKenzie. The Patriots have road games at Kansas City, at Seattle, at Houston, at both Los Angeles teams. What does that mean? They're going to travel 29,594 miles, the most since 2008. And yes, they missed the playoffs in 2008.
When I first saw that they're one of three teams with back-to-back-to-back road games, I'm like, what are the Patriots doing to Belichick? I mean, the league, what are they doing to keep these guys in the gutter like this? I mean, is it just punishment for 20 years of success? But then I figured it out. So week 13 and 14, they're in L.A., they're facing the Chargers, then they face the Rams. This is a gift to Belichick. He gets to hang out in L.A. by a beach, stay there the whole week. They're not going back to New England. The season's going to be over by that point. They're just going to be have their feet kicked up with one of those, you know, pineapple drinks. They're going to be relaxing by that point. This is a year off for the lauded Patriots.
Wait a minute now. You can't be serious. First of all, Governor Newsom will shut the beach down that week. He'll have his panties in a bunch.
True.
And so you can't go to the beach, Belichick.
Might not be the year to spend a week in L.A.
And by the way, I think the Rams are going to be far more competitive than people realize. That's going to be a tough out. And the Chargers, I think, are going to be absolutely much improved. And sandwiched in between, you've still got the Baltimore-Houston game back-to-back. You got Buffalo and the Jets to close out the season in Miami. I think their division is much tougher than it's been in the past.
Yes.
Now, this is not a slight against Belichick. This is a situation where if you even look, McKenzie, at the Patriots' 12-4 record last year, were they really a 12-4 team? If you go through the Pythagorean theorem, they started out 8-0, and whatever everybody's saying, they haven't played anybody yet, which always makes my teeth itch because you don't say that about National Football League teams. But it is a fact. If you're playing teams that finished 10-6 versus teams that finished 6-10, it's better for the soul. So after starting out 8-0, they finished up 4-4 and then got knocked out the first round of the playoffs. That was with Tom Brady. And by the way, they had a very good defense. Nothing against Jarrett Stidham. From what I understand, he's ready to assume the reins. Belichick's going to hand him the keys to the car, but he's got no experience. We don't know what he's really going to do when the bullets fly.
And you could argue the 199th draft pick of the year 2000 didn't have any experience either when he came in, one Tom Brady. But that's literally like a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence. There's Tony Romo and Tom Brady, and other than that, late draft picks just rarely, rarely pan out. And looking at some of these spreads that came out, Vegas is not high on what the Patriots' possibilities are. Week 7 at home, Caesars put a look-ahead line when the 49ers face them. The 49ers are 2.5-point favorites at New England. My jaw hit the floor when I saw that. This is even crazier. Week 16, Caesars put a look-ahead line out. And these are look-ahead lines. They're not as strong as regular lines, but this is what they think at Caesars. Week 16, the Patriots host the Bills. The Bills are 1.5-point favorites. They think the season's going to be over by the Patriots by week 16 is my only explanation as to why these lines would make any sense.
Well, as we all know, the look-ahead lines can be vastly different than when the actual game is played. The dynamic can change quite a bit.
True.
They are laying a healthy line week 1 against the Miami Dolphins, 6.5, and I think Brian Flores has done a fabulous job down here. But we've buried the lead. These lines are made with the thought that there may not even be fans in the stands. So will traveling to New England be that daunting where, to your point, Seattle is also a road favorite as they're laying 3.5. I believe they're laying 3.5?
Yes, that's in Seattle, though.
Okay, excuse me. I apologize. So the Raiders go to Seattle week 2 and then to the Raiders week 3 where the Raiders actually be a 5-point dog against New England.
There's only two games on this schedule where they're more than a 6-point favorite. Week 1 against Miami, you already said they struggle sometimes there, and week 17, so 16 weeks later, they're more than a 6-point favorite. They're a 9-point favorite projected against the Jets. I mean, if they lose against Miami, all bets are off. They're not going to win 8 games.
Well, I don't think they'll sweep Miami. Miami's been a thorn in their side. They were a thorn in their side 2 years ago when they prevented the Patriots from having to, you know, play a home playoff game, and then they got them last year, which cost the Patriots a bye. So,
best bet, Miami Dolphins plus 900. They could steal this thing in the AFC East.
I don't know if I can go that far.
Because plus 900 is just...
Well, is Tua gonna carry the, you know, the torch the entire season? I mean, that's a tough one. That's a tough one to back. These are things we'll be talking about. All right, folks, that is going to do it for this week's edition of Straight Out of Vegas. I want to thank Larry Sorensen, former Major League Baseball pitcher, 10 years, 25-year broadcaster, talking about pitch logic. Thanks, McKenzie, for all your help. Thanks to the guys back in Los Angeles. Next up, Jason Martin. He's the man who brings it strong. It is time for the Jason Martin Show.
Straight Out of Vegas!